This book review has been slightly modified to optimize your listening experience. While we have included a brief description of the figures and tables, all references, citations, footnotes, and endnotes have been removed. To obtain the tables, figures, quotes, full references and citations for this paper, please view the HTML or PDF version. June 2007. International Review of Research in Open and Distance Learning. Volume 8, Number 2. Book Review, by Gary Boyd, Concordia University, Canada. The book title is Knowledge Education and Learning, E-Learning in the Knowledge Society. The author is Lars Gvortrup. The author. Lars Gvortrup is a professor of media research at the University of Southern Denmark and the director of the Knowledge Lab there. He is an important continuing contributor to the journal Cybernetics and Human Knowing, on many aspects of knowledge media and society. What Gvortrup provides. In the field of open and distance learning, despite the dictum that there is nothing more practical than a good theory, there actually are very few practical theories of any depth. There is an overwhelming predominance of practical persons who get things done with dispatch, but who have little understanding of what their ventures are really doing to people, and, indeed, don't want to know because that would make decisions slower and more painful. Our tools and media are now becoming really potent for changing people, and for doing so all over the world. This should give us pause. Gvortrup is particularly interesting because he does make a good attempt at developing deep understanding of how knowledge proceeds and carries that understanding over into practical advice for e-learning developers. He offers a distinctive and valuable European perspective to enable us to understand just how we live in a knowledge society and how the development of a knowledge society implies the need for lifelong learning with particular kinds of e-learning support. He offers it in clear and, for the most part, quite readable English. The main question Gvortrup sets out to answer in this book is, how does and can information and communication technology-mediated lifelong learning help us in making the knowledge society vision a reality? To answer this question, new systemic categorizations of knowledge, learning, and teaching are advanced. These then are carefully related to existing theories of e-learning. The whole undertaking is done within the large societal systems framework of Nicholas Luhmann. There is, however, a worrisome aspect about making epistemology primary, as postmodernists and neopragmatists had pointed out, in that using second and third order epistemic structures is detrimental to meaning when we let them do our interpreting for us. There are aspects of the so-called knowledge society, which Gvortrup seems to accept, and which I believe ought to be seriously questioned. There are important cases where much greater knowledge is not a good thing. For instance, knowledge without power is frustrating and depressing. B. Knowledge with power and without compassion and commitment to its socially responsible use is evil. I define evil as whatever gratuitously destroys persons' plausible hopes. What knowledge is and what it is for. Gvortrup, following Luhmann, defines knowledge as condensed observations. In my opinion, that is an inadequate definition because what is involved is much more complex and creative and collaborative than mere condensation. In any case, the noun knowledge is a questionable reification. It is better to consider us as collaboratively doing knowledging. As Gvortrup himself asserts, knowledge is not just a fixed ability but a dynamic ability. Gvortrup then goes on to assert that its function is to manage complexity, based on the principle that complexity can manage complexity. I agree. Actually, this is an example of the application of the Ashby-Shannon central cybernetic law of requisite variety. The control variety available must equal or exceed the disturbance variety for any system to be controllable. Managing complexity, or at least coping with and steering complex dynamic processes, is indeed a most important challenge for all of us. However, surely that is not the be-all and end-all of a person's life? Gvortrup's approach is a very pragmatic and, to me, a somewhat depressingly utilitarian view of knowledge. Humanist educators would argue that the elaboration, validation and sharing of wonderful knowledge is an essential, deeply satisfying part of being human, and as such is an end in itself. Categories arising from applying knowledge to itself recursively. Gvortrup argues for four emergent categories of knowledge as being paramount. 1. Simple factual knowledge. 2. Recursive, knowledge of how to use one's knowledge equals competence. 3. Reflective, knowledge of the conditions on which knowledge is based. 4. Total knowledge, all that we can know in distinction from what we cannot know. He then explains at length what it takes for educators to enable learners to develop knowledge at those of these levels relevant to agreed goals. Instructors and students, who hope to manage complexity, must be helped to learn how to construct all four kinds of knowledge in turn, at least insofar as they are capable of such learning. Theoretical structure. Gvortrup supports his analysis, syntheses, and recommendations on three basic perspectives that I believe are of genuinely foundational importance. 1. Contextualization of learning as embedded in, and constrained by, multiple large societal institution systems, particularly instrumental autopoietic systems as understood by Nicholas Luhmann. 2. Models of learners as complexly coupled non-trivial universe observer-describer systems, particularly as understood by Heinz von Forster. 3. A carefully differentiated and stratified understanding of knowledge in this case as understood by Lundvall, who wrote, "Knowledge is a representation of something according to interpretation standards, which may change from person to person and from teacher to pupil. My knowledge is not equal to your knowledge and it cannot be transported from me to you." And a new categorization of such knowledge into four very basic successively emergent types. 1. Factual knowledge, know what and know why. 2. Recursive knowledge, know-how competencies. 3. Reflective knowledge, creativity capabilities. 4. Meta-reflective knowledge, culture. Each of these basic kinds of knowledge requires specific kinds of learning and evaluation activities according to Gvortrup's prescriptions. Gvortrup's categories can usefully be compared with the recent versions of taxonomy based on the Bloom and Maddow's work and with my own system of emergent cyber-systemic levels of learning. Relevance and value. To assess the relevance and value of Gvortrup's work for e-learning institutions and developers, let us consider the big challenges now faced by them. What are the main ongoing challenges now in open and distance e-learning venture development? There are two really basic challenges. First, to survive institutionally in a turbulent competitive world. And second, to provide enough of their stakeholders, especially students and employers, with good value for time and money spent. Unfortunately, too often it has been possible, at least for a while, to impress and to please funders and other stakeholders without providing proportionate real value, partly because the beneficiary accountability feedback loops have such long delays built into them. In fact, these delays are getting shorter, so the accountability challenge is increasing. For a current example, look at the Phoenix Online University situation, as reported in the New York Times. What of value now has Gvortrup's book to offer with respect to these two main challenges? A great deal, I believe. Relevance of Luhmann's theory of society for educational, e-learning, organization and venture viability. Gvortrup tackles the viability problem mainly in terms of how e-learning can meet the needs of the new global knowledge society and how the institutional system imperatives identified by Luhmann must be dealt with by using his ideas. Here a digression about autopoiesis is perhaps necessary. The concept Maturana and Varela developed in the 1970s to characterize living things autopoiesis, and which Luhmann applied assiduously to social systems as he conceived them, needs some demystification. Autopoiesis literally means self-production. In order for primitive living organisms to produce themselves, that is to survive and to reproduce, they must have good clothing against chemical and mechanical threats in their environment, which could wreck their metabolism or their DNA. They also have to have good opening to take in food and get rid of waste products. In Maturana's terms, they have to be structurally closed against information which would alter DNA, and so forth. When we come to consider social animals, they have to communicate to survive and reproduce, but we also have to have good closings against anything that would alter our genetic identity. Thus far autopoiesis holds. However, we also have evolved to feel that we must try to close ourselves off against anything which threatens our personal cultural identity. So for us, the goodness of openings and closings is not automatically structurally determined, but rather presents formidable choice and action problems. Hence Gvortrup refers to structural closure as a problematical construct. Lemon, according to Gvortrup's, distinguish two basic sorts of systems, psychic systems and social systems. He also asserted that psychic systems do not comprise a society's essence and building blocks, but rather its surrounding world. Contra Margaret Thatcher's dictum that there is no such thing as society. In Lemon's view, society is very real and is definitely not considered to be just a sum total of human individuals. A number of highly complex polycentric conglomerates of mutually loosely coupled systems create social order, that is, constitute meaning-based distinctions between themselves and their social environment or umwelt. These are our major social systems: law, politics, art, education, medicine and religion. Social order is established when the diversity of communicative systems creates an extremely complex dynamic stability. Society does not exist on the strength of the purity of social order, but rather on the complex impurity of social structures. In other words, a large number of fairly autonomous functional systems such as the legal system, the economic system, the art system, the healthcare system, and the educational system, spontaneously emerge from all the complex intercommunication of myriads of groups. These big societal systems are both preconditions for each other's existence and competitors. They constantly collide and seek to achieve dominance over each other. Our institutions, our ventures, and our psychic selves are embedded in them all. In general, the viability of particular e-learning ventures depends on how the embeddedness is imposed and how it is negotiated. This negotiation occurs through a medium and a symbolic code unique to each big functional system. For example, the medium of the economic system is money and the code is payment or non-payment. Lemon asserted that the general function of the education system is to change people and therefore that the working medium of the educational system is learner lifetime. The lifelong learner is a social construction that allows the educator plausible hope that it is possible to change people in ways that are deeply desired. The code which Lemon asserts is used by the education system is transmittable or non-transmittable. This is a bit tricky to grasp, and moreover goes against our current constructivist understanding that education is not about transmission, but rather is about co-construction of knowledge and skills, attitudes, and commitments. As far as I can make out, Lemon's conception of the education system connects with the understanding that many citizens and most educators wish to either clone the best parts of themselves or transmit something even better along the same lines they have loved and struggled to pursue. Any particular educational organization has to lay claim to a population of compatible learners and suitable educators, and to claim as legitimate a range of ways, that is, technologies, by which it can try to transmit changes that most stakeholders agree are for the better. If it can do that, then the economic system of money can be brought into alignment with the educational system of learners. According to Gvortrup, that is the big picture of societal system understanding to which we should continually refer back in setting our strategic and tactical priorities if we wish to carry on viable e-learning ventures. Improving the actual learning of our students. Meeting the second open and distance learning challenge, to provide enough of our stakeholders, especially students and employers, with good value for time and money spent, requires better learning activity development and better learning environment design and deployment. Gvortrup's interesting contribution is based on a synthesis of activity theory and constructivist theory carried out in terms of his four categories of knowledge. He goes beyond instructivist and the currently fashionable body phenomenological paradigms to what I take to be a revival of Piaget's and George Kelly's uses of the parallel between individuals' learning and the development of knowledge in scientific communities. For him, theoretical epistemology is central to the construction of curriculum and to the design of learning support activities. When seen from my pragmatic point of view, this knowledge-centered approach suffers a certain unreality, because Gvortrup ignores the actual centrality of both intrinsic and extrinsic motivation to the generation of knowledge and capabilities and, indeed, to all of education. A great deal more could be said about Gvortrup's understanding of didactics, offline, and of pedagogy, real-time engagement which seems to depend on synchronous communication, that is, his pedagogy would best apply to interactive online small group teaching. Gvortrup helpfully exhibits how some actual examples represent realizations of his theory of how higher orders of knowledge can be developed in those e-learning situations where it makes especially good sense, for example, in social simulations and portfolios supported by teacher-learner discussion. In summary, why various types of reflective erotal readers might wish to read Gvortrup. Lars Gvortrup's book offers a delightful controversial opportunity to reflect insightfully on topics, which I believe are central to any and all legitimately worthwhile e-learning. Especially now when we are facing many extraordinary new challenges, Gvortrup's work should, I believe, be of appreciable value to all those who are thoughtfully developing open and distance learning ventures today. In particular, curriculum developers should read Gvortrup on the categories and forms of most needed knowledge and how they can be evaluated. Instructional designers should read Gvortrup on didactics, which he defines as immediate first-order reflection on teaching versus pedagogy defined as protracted second-order reflection on teaching and media and learning. Open and distance learning administrators, innovators, and developer should read Gvortrup on Nicholas Luhmann's exposition of how the systemic imperatives of public education systems as societal systems in competition with the other major societal institutional systems, business, politics, religion, art, law, both constrain us and provide us with new opportunities. This is the end of the book review. The full text format of this review is available on the Erodl website, www.irrodl.org. Goodbye.